Hello, and welcome to Maximal Fire. I'm Alex.
And I'm Johnny.
And today we're going to be talking about the competitive gaming scene within Adeptus Titanicus. So, Johnny, we're back to the pre-recorded format of this podcast. We had a little bit of an experiment a couple of weeks ago with a live version of this, which was quite good fun, wasn't it?
It was good. Definitely really hard to talk and also do all of the OBS stuff that you have to do of the live sessions.
Yeah, I think you did a sterling job on that. Obviously, I couldn't see what you were doing at the time, but when I watched the stream back afterwards, very impressive, mate. Well done, especially because we didn't really have... It was kind of a little bit of a flying by the seat of our pants idea. Mm-hmm. I think it was like the night before or something. It was like, let's do a stream. And then...
Cue to me sweating, quickly putting scenes together in OBS.
Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's because we put that episode up only on YouTube. So that's not actually available on the regular Spotify or Apple Podcasts format. It was a live chat that we did in our kind of more sort of relaxed... Reactor chat, we're calling it, aren't we? Kind of like where we sort of react to the news. And that one was, it was quite focused around sort of the epic reveal. I know there's a lot of people who say it's not coming. I look forward to being able to say, we told you so. but it was great. We had a surprising amount of people in the chat, actually, much more than we were. I think we were kind of expecting to be those guys with like, two dudes who are like waving a flag. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was really, quite excited. How many guys tuned in and girls, it felt good. It felt really good. It felt very natural. Obviously when technical difficulties hit, it's a little bit choppy and but we only had one bit there. So no, it was good. I enjoyed it. I think it was, definitely something we want to do again in the future at some point.
Yeah, I think it's a really good, it works really well for kind of getting that immediate news out of there when we've got like a new release or something like that. So I think we will certainly kind of look at that being like a bit of a format to get our kind of opinions immediately out there where something cool drops or something interesting drops. So do keep an eye out for like announcements of that. Join in the live chat, sort of give us a bit of encouragement to do it. It's the second time we've done a stream, actually, but this is the more traditional format, so we've still got loads of ideas of things that we want to do, but unfortunately I think it's fair to say work is kicking both of our asses at the moment, so
a little bit.
The content has scaled back a little bit. It's also if you are in the UK and you've been on like the AT Facebook page, you'll probably know that there is a ton of events going on at the moment. I think ever since Beachhead in February through to kind of July, it's like every other weekend there's an event, and we try and kind of participate in as many of those as possible to kind of, you know, keep in with the community. So there was obviously Beachhead in February, then we did the Maximal Fire meetup at Warhammer World at the end of April, and then a couple of weeks ago I was in Swansea for Swansea Comic Con, or SwanCon, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And then in a couple of weeks' time from now, I'm up in Newcastle for their, I forget the name that they've called their event. It's another tournament up in Newcastle. And then it's our own event on the 8th of July in Entoyment in Poole. Which is going to be kind of like, you know, here's our smooth... sort of plug. There's still tickets available for that, and we will put details in the description if you are interested. Tickets are available through Eventbrite, and that's going to be a 1750 one-day tournament. So we had a bit of feedback from a few people, like these 2-day things were great, but I think we veteran gamers kind of sometimes struggle to kind of get time away from families or jobs and that kind of stuff. And there
real
was
life, yeah.
Yeah, there was a few people who wanted to participate but couldn't commit to a 2-dayer, so we thought we'll try and cater for both. So we'll have our big 2-dayer in Beachhead at the beginning of the year, and we'll try and do at least one single dayer. So Maximal Fire 4, because I've run out of interesting names to call it. And I think Die Hard was just Die Hard 4, wasn't it? Or was that...
What
was that?
Die Hard.
Die Harder. Die Hard with a Vengeance. Die Hardest. I don't know.
Wasn't Die Hard 4 the like hacker one, right? That was like this hacker dude. That was, God,
those, was that Live Hard and Live Fast and Die Hard, or it was something lame like that? But we think we milked the kind of Die Hard reactor meltdown with a vengeance. I think it was last summer. I think we've done that. I think we've done with that. So we're just up to plain old boring Maximal Fire 4. Although it's actually
with a new,
we do. We could maybe go with the Aliens theme. This one could be called Maximal Fire. The next one could be called Maximal Fires. And then the one after that, Maximal Fire 3.
Fire 3, and then Maximal Resurrection. Or Maximal Fire Resurrection. Why not?
So although this is Maximal Fire 4, it's actually going to be our sixth event that we've run, including Beachhead, which we kind of keep a little bit separate from that.
Okay, so hear me out. If then we went on to the Alien versus Predator movies, where it would be Maximal Fire versus... Who would the versus be?
Oh, I think it has to be our old nemesis's tabletop standard, probably.
Nemesis.
Yeah, I think we're overdue either getting Chris and the guys on one of our bat reps, or us going back on now that he's done up his garage to kind of replay that game that me and Ben played with them. When was that? Like 2 years ago, I think was the last time that we did it, which is good fun. But yeah, probably going to be tabletop standard, I would say.
Oh yeah.
Should we just get some admin out of the way before we try and move on to the main content?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we'll start with the patron shout outs. So, obviously if you sign up to be a patron of Maximal Fire, as well as various benefits that you can get, like access to a free SDL or a discount code for Battle Bling. Everybody gets a shout out on this show. So since we did the last one, which would have been the live show where we did our last load of shout outs, we've had, want to give a shout out to Roland Lucas, Metalhead. Yes, absolutely. And Doug Chamberlain. Yeah. So thank you very much, guys. If you've signed up to get a shout out, and you don't remember hearing it, chances are I think we probably covered it in the live stream. So maybe go check that out. But we also add all of our patrons to our credits at the end as well. So really appreciate everybody supporting the show. I think actually we are at like 2 years now of Patreon for Maximal Fire, which is amazing. And some people have been backing us since day one. So I think I need to find out a list of those people and find a way to say thank you to them. On the subject of Battle Bling as well, we've recently got access to an affiliate link, and the details will be in the description. Every time you use that link when you are purchasing stuff from Battle Bling, the show will get a small kickback of whatever it is that you buy. So if you still want to support the show, but you don't necessarily want to sort of sign up to Patreon, which you can back from as little as £1 if you want to, then that's another great way that you can help support us. So I think the last bit of news, I promised Greg from Smells Like Machine Spirit that I would do a little shout out for him. So he's got an event in Washington, in Bellevue on the 16th of September. That is the Fall Brawl, tournament. So great to see, like, the American tournament scene sort of getting... I'm sure there's more of this going on. It's just people don't tell me, so I don't plug it. But yes, if you are in Washington, it's going to be held at Mox Bellevue, in Bellevue, in Washington on Saturday, the 16th of September. So have a look on the Facebook 2018 page, also the Horus Heresy and AT events page on Facebook, or you can also join our Discord server, and all of this information is in our AT events channel, and we also actually have events set up as like little calendar reminders in the top of our server.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so like we were saying, it very much is tournament season at the moment. I went to Swansea a couple of weeks ago. It was the first time that I've been allowed out on my own without my family or my small child, and having no family responsibilities for a long time. It was run by Dougie Douglas, also known as the Viscount of Swansea. And he did a great job, and he also massively looked out for us. I think he used his mafia connections to get us some good sort of deals with rooms in hotels and stuff, and to kind of kick things off as well. It was Eurovision night, so we not only did we kind of drink a lot, but we also got to enjoy a little bit of Eurovision. Like it or not, it's a bit of a dirty... Not a dirty secret.
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. Yes, bit of a guilty pleasure for me is the old. Although we did appalling this year, which is, it is what it is. Back to normal in Eurovision for the UK. And then last weekend was the Twisted Titanicus doubles event as well, which I think that's the first doubles event that I've been aware of in the UK. I don't know if it's been done anywhere else, but Jim wanted to kind of give the new doubles matched play rules a go from the new match play guide. So that sounds like that was a lot of fun. And unfortunately I couldn't make that one because it would have been a bit much and I already burnt a lot of wife points.
You just don't generate them quick enough, mate.
Yeah, I need to do something, I think. I need to do something epic to kind of then... I'm just very lucky that I've got an incredibly tolerant wife who puts up with my bullshit because, yeah, there's a lot of people who probably aren't as tolerant as she is. But SwanCon was great. It was 2 days, four games over 2 days. So it was a really chilled out, relaxed game. Didn't really start until 10 o'clock. Two games on the first day, two games on the second day, 2,000 points, match play, rules. And played four great games of Titanicus. It was hard. And especially kind of like on the second day where we'd had a night of drinking, like trying to get the brain to work was even harder. But I played against three people who I've never played before. And that was Sarah, who's actually one of our mods on Discord. Never played her before, despite the fact I've known her for about 18 months. Played against her lovely Venator. I got to play against Dan from Bottom of the Barrel. Check out their battle reports if you haven't heard of those guys. Do some excellent AT content. Mm-hmm. And his Vulturum. I played against Ollie, who's actually one of our patrons, and he had some lovely painted Ossadaks. And finally, I played a Knight's Household from John Horsham of Battlebling. And every game, it was just... it was hard. Like, I've been to a few tournaments before, and, like, sometimes things just sort of happen naturally for you. And you can kind of just go with it, you know, throw some dice. Oh, look, I've won. Yay. But I had to work so damn hard. I won my first three games. The game against Dan, stupidly close. I think I only won by a handful of points to take that one. And then the game against Ollie was the same. Literally, there was maybe five or six points, if I remember rightly. And he really put me through my paces on that one. I lost a Warhound first turn. And through my own fault... Yeah, for my own fault, I wanted to, I needed to move to a piece of cover, so I pushed that Warhound's reactor, and of course, double heat. So his shields immediately collapse, because I rolled, like, I think it was a four or a five or something. And then it kind of, from there on in, I was just constantly on the back foot. And really, really, Ollie should have won that game. I think that one I only won because I played a score to settle. The tertiary objective, which bumped up my secondaries and ultimately gave me the win. And my final game of the weekend, I lost to John from Battle Bling. That was against the Night Household, which are tough to beat.
They sound like actual hell. They're up against.
Yeah, they were really hard. And he had the House Indra ability, which allows you, it's a 3-point stratagem, allows you to bring on a destroyed banner again. So, I know. Knights, yay. So at the end of the game, I held back. I had one of my princeps, and I'd taken... a primary and secondary combination, which was push forwards, and I think it was deny them, which means that your prince, two models have to survive until the end of the game. One of them's a prince. If one of them's a princeps, it's like 9 points. And push forwards, which you have to be within a certain distance of the table edge. And I took Tempestus, so I held on to this guy basically until turn four, and then drop podded him. Right behind John's lines. I lost everything apart from that one Warhound Princeps. John had one Cerastus Knight left, and that one Cerastus Knight had one structure point left on it.
Oh my god, no.
And he had the same as me, push forwards. So, basically he scored more in his secondary than I did. But if I'd have just done one more 9-up structure point, I would have won the game. But that's how I find most games with Knights go. Like, I played against James McMeekin at the second Reactor Meltdown tournament, and I played against his Knights. And in the end, I just beat him because I... on the last dice roll of the game, I needed a 5-up to hit with a melter gun, and it went my way.
Nice.
So, like, it's always, whenever I play them, it's always super clutch. Always clutch. So that was a shame. I think I was on track to go second. If I'd have beaten John, I would have finished second. As it turned out, I came fourth, just missed out on placement. Ooh. Just really tight in the top three. I still walked away with Best Painted, though, for my Tempestus, so I was super happy to come back with something. I don't know if I've hidden my trophy at the back there. He's behind Mr. Buggerlugs, so I'm not going to go grab him. But, it was a great event, and Swansea's a beautiful city. I've never been there before. I think about half of the people at that tournament actually turned out to be patrons, or close to it. Which was amazing. It's always good to see everybody and kind of like shake hands and actually meet patrons who I've not seen before. So, it was awesome. I think I'd definitely go back again, especially if we can get in at that hotel, because it was awesome. and their cocktails were epic. So that was Swansea. So now I'm prepping for Newcastle in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to take my Graphonicus to this one, do something a little bit different. Mostly because Newcastle's 1750, and I spent the first 3 months building my 2K list for Swansea. I'm not gonna paint another Reeve or something in 2 weeks to like change it to a 1750. But tournament season well and truly kind of in the flow, which is why I guess we thought we would do this little bit of a bit.
Perfect timing, eh?
Yeah, about competitive gaming. So I'm not, although I go to a lot of tournaments, it's mostly so I can see people. I'm just hitting my mic. I'm not what I would call a competitive gamer, but I guess if you've ever played against me, you might think otherwise.
Don't lie to yourself.
I think it's, you know, I cut my teeth on AT playing against Ben, who's like one of the best AT players I've ever played against, and George as well, who's the same. Both of them together are really tough opponents, so learnt a lot from them. And I am very happy to say that Ben is returning to playing AT again. So he's going to be at the tournament in July. Played a game against him, actually. I've got more Titans for my cabinet now. I bought.
You have a problem.
I really do. I really do. I bought a really nicely painted Furion's Maniple from, it's more than a Maniple, but Battle Force from Stu Oliver. And the first time that they got a run in was Ben borrowed those to play a game with me against my Tempestus. And yeah, I still don't like Furions. They're bloody awful in a good way. Like, they hurt so much. Like, hunting aspects, man, Jesus. And that game came down to us both getting a bit of a bloodlust and just shouting engine kill and forgetting all about our objectives. And Ben beat me 5 victory points to 0. That's how much we cared about our primaries and secondaries.
So damn close.
Yeah, it was good fun though. It was good fun. But yeah, there is a side of AT which some people may not have kind of gotten involved in. So AT is naturally, I guess you'd call it a narrative game, a little bit like Horus Heresy, but there is a growing tournament scene, and it's a game which does lend itself quite well to tournaments, but not the kind of super hyper-competitive tournaments that you might get with other games. Like, there's still a lot of kind of camaraderie and fun, certainly in my experience, which is retained on AT, which makes it a great game if you're playing narratively or if you're playing it competitively. I have noticed there's been a bit of a drop-off in the amount of, like, narrative events. I know Tom Stallard, he does one up in Chichester every year. I went to one of those a couple of years ago, which was great fun. And I don't know if it's maybe because tournaments are a bit easier to run than narrative.
I think Titanicus lends itself really well to tournaments just because it isn't like cover war games like 40K, for example, where you have a Tyranid army and a Space Marine army, and those two things have two different profiles as well as then their faction specific rules, right? In Titanicus, it is generally engines versus engines, and their base stat line is nigh on identical, right? So the only, I guess, alteration to whichever faction or allegiance you choose is down to just like, you know, rules that modify either the Titans themselves or like the gameplay experience. But those rules, I would argue, aren't as like effective of the game as other wargame rules. Again, like 40K, where you can have rules that can really shift the balance of a game. In Titanicus, I feel like they are enough to make the individual factions feel distinct and different, but they aren't so overpowering that, you know, that there are clear, defined meta factions to go, right? Meta legios to go. I think it shows itself quite well with some of the top players of AT being able to switch up legios and still walk away with, you know, very high placings in tournaments just for the fun of it, right?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to, like you say, it's I can't remember, we sort of threw out a random percentage, but we kind of have always sort of said it's like 60% the Titans that you actually take, and then maybe like 20% the maniples that you select, and then like 10% the rules that you take, and the rest of it is just down to you being good at the game. Mm-hmm. But a lot of
just why it's a perfect match play game, because there are less of those roll dice feel bad moments, because your opponent generally has the same sort of odds that you do when you roll dice, right?
Yeah, and you know exactly what they can do. Well, most of the time, there's always going to be exceptions to the rules, right? There's not as many gotchas as you get in some games, or those sort of like they can do what now moments. Mm-hmm. There's still a few, especially when you start chucking in corruptions and stuff, and like my brain starts frying when I'm like, so I want to just speak to Dan from bottom of the barrel as to how I coped with his Vulturum list. It's like, so that's on a -1. When that happens in that scenario, but if I'm here, then I'm getting extra shield damage and what? But yeah, it's you can look at a Titan and go, I know roughly what that's capable of. Yeah. I know what I can expect to come my way from that Titan within a good tolerance, and then there's just sort of like those extra little rules on top from the legios, from the maniples. And again, even the maniples, right? Most people will know what a maniple is capable of doing. It's only really when you get down to the legio rules that it starts being a bit more.
Yeah, even if you don't know that what a Ferox maniple gives, you know it's the close range does more damage maniple, right?
Yeah.
So you know, yeah, I think that's maybe why people are stepping away from distinctively narrative events, because what's the point of putting the like effort into running a narrative event when like the normal use for a narrative event is to like take a relaxing step away from the competitive scene and like run units that people don't necessarily always run and stuff like that. In Titanicus, again, you're going to be playing with the same models doing the same stuff whether you're playing narratively or not, so why not put it in a structure that lends itself well to, you know, a big multiplayer setting? Because the game itself, like, it has so many moments that build narrative. You know, I find that, you know, from TOing and playing in tournaments, that you watch people playing and no one is like sweating it out doing, you know, like, you know, dirty tricks or like just not talking to their opponent or whatever. They're generally having a good time, a good laugh. Everyone gets excited when stuff dies and like funny events go off, like catastrophic chain explosions that, you know, are more common than you think, and are totally, you know, not fair, but even the person that has it landing on them loves it because it's just so ridiculous and, you know, and funny. In 40K, you know, like you said, there's so many or other war games, not just 40K, there's so many got your moments that it can feel a bit disheartening when you do get stomped. Whereas if I get stomped a lot and I still have a great time playing, you know?
And so. I think that's kind of evident as well by the fact that I've been to multiple tournaments where there's been multiple people who have said, look, this is like my third game of AT, you know, and they still have a great time, you know, okay. They're probably going to lose a few of those games. Because, you know, especially if you get matched up with a more experienced opponent. But they still have a great time, you know, and, you know, I've had that feedback a couple of times from a few people at, you know, our beachhead events, that people treat it as a way of getting in more games, especially if you're playing five games of Titanicus. Like, you might not get five games in a month of playing AT normally, but you go to a tournament. And, you know, as long as you know the basics of the rules, if you say to somebody at any event that I've been to, you know, I'm a bit rusty on, I'm not quite, you know, so confident. Most people turn around and say, all right, mate, well, let's roll some dice and I'll tell you kind of where you're going wrong or like what you need to do. And everyone's really accommodating. But saying that, I would like to see a few more narrative games again. It's an area of this game that I've not really had much opportunity to properly immerse myself in. I think, you know, when we're out of tournament season, I think I'm going to be sort of, we've been talking locally about possibly doing a little bit of a mini narrative campaign with a few local players and sort of, especially now that the campaign compendium has been released, I'd quite like to experiment with some of those rules, like the, you know, the rules where Titans can get experience, or like, are they persisted game over game, like all that sort of stuff. Something where there is kind of impact over multiple days.
But again, that's the thing, right? That suits a smaller local scene that's able to put in, you know, possibly like weeks of games spread out. You know, whereas like a 2-day tournament, you may have leveling up between the days or between the games, but it's not going to be as streamlined or smooth, you know, smooth as that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But whether or not you are a competitive player or if you are a, you know, more narrative gamer, everybody likes to win. And I guess a lot of what we're going to talk about today, although we're calling it kind of like how to play competitively, I guess a lot of this, what we're going to talk about is relevant to how you can make a list or how you can play a game and be, you know, be competitive. I keep hitting my mic tonight. It's probably going to be thumping all the time. I'm gesticulating too much with my hands.
Too excited. See, yeah. You say you're not a competitive gamer, but your arms are going all over the place.
Yeah,
I know. Start mentioning it.
I know. I'm just getting excited. But, you know, I mean, we see a lot of lists. I've seen a lot of a lot of different Legios. So we thought this was a good opportunity, especially with the match play guide now being out for a few months, more events kind of under our sway that we would talk a little bit more about how to approach competitive games in a tournament setting or not. Or let's just say matched play games where, you know, you are setting rules, you are setting stratagem hands, and you are playing two objectives, two specific objectives, let's say either open war or from the match play guide. And hopefully as well, there might be a few little kind of tidbits in there that if you are thinking about running your own event, some things to consider as a tournament organizer. And we've always said, if you want to run an AT event, but you don't really know where to start, you know, hit us up on maximalfire@gmail.com. We'll more than happily send you over a copy of one of our event packs, and you can use that as a springboard to sort of like a loose guidelines that you can use to help run your own events. All we ask is just say, you know, provide our name in it, pack provided with the assistance of Maximal Fire. That's all we ask. But we've waffled and we've talked a bit about events, but should we actually try and give people some... Let's actually sort of dig into it a bit more.
This is going to be as useful for me as our audience, I feel. So I'm excited to pick your brain.
I hope that we can that it can live up to that. I probably should have got
a few morsels.
I probably should have got Stu Oliver on for this one. You know, he's still undefeated at tournaments. And his list and theory crafting is very good. But you'll have to do with me. I have won one event that I've won. And, you know, I've come fairly high in a couple. So hopefully I'm not talking complete trash. I've had a podcast for 2 years. So hopefully I've got an opinion.
That'd be silly.
Yeah, you would hope that by now that I know what I'm talking about. But who knows? Every day's a school day. Where should we start?
List building? the beginning of the journey into competitive play.
List building.
Literally the best bit of the experience. I love list building.
Yeah, I mean, I got Battlescribe on my phone and it's just full of lists. I used to start calling them like Gryphonicus version 1 and I was like, that ain't going to work. Because I'm like, what on earth is Gryphonicus version 2 got in it? That So now I've started trying to build them for specific events. So like Newcastle version 1, Newcastle version 2. And like for this event that I'm prepping for in Newcastle, I think I came up with like 3 lists that I was considering running, all of which, excuse me, were kind of variations on a theme of what I kind of was thinking about doing. I think the number one thing when you're building a list is build something that you think you're going to have fun with, you know, something that plays into your play style. So if you like close combat, you know, you hopefully pick the Legio, which is a close combat Legio, lean into that. Don't try and kind of like, if you want to be competitive anyway, don't try and kind of like put a round peg in a square hole. You know, for instance, a Vulpar Exturgibus is probably not going to do as well as a Vulpar Corsair or a Vulpar Ferox or something like that. But you will get more out of your games, obviously, if you are enjoying what it is you're doing. The next thing that you need to consider is how big of a game is it? So 1750 is generally considered these days to be a normal-sized match play game. I know some places still use 1500, but those points generally increased to 1750 around about the time that we started getting war gear. From like the loyalist books. It means that you can add a little bit more diversity into your list. You can take some heavier titans, and it gives you a little bit of flexibility to do what you want. So I've always found that the 1750 points is a bit of a sweet spot for AT. But, you know, I've also been to events which were 1850 and 2000, and I know some places have kind of even gone bigger, but my personal favorite is still 1750. I think that offers you enough points to build a list that's interesting to run, but also kind of doesn't start running away with everything and you start chucking the kitchen sink in just to kind of make up the points. There'll always be some element of sacrifice at 1750 that you can't quite do what you want to do, but enough that you will still have a good hard-hitting list. Yeah.
You can add like enough war gear to have a bit of fun with it without taking all the war gear on all the titans. List building can be tricky because when you're dealing with so few units with such high points values compared to like the actual, you know, maximum points itself, I find it so much where I'm left with like an awkward number of points to have free. So either there's like 100, 150 points left over, and it's like, that's a lot of war gear that I might just be like wasting on, you know, just getting it for the sake of getting it because I've got the leftover points, or
not quite enough
Zerastus Knights points worth gonna, you know.
Yeah, it's that really awkward spot, isn't it? Between, oh yeah, I can afford 3 Questorus Knights, or like 2 Cerastus Knights, that kind of around about 100 points, you can't really get anything for that. And so if using that as an example, at that point there, if I'm finding myself, and I have the luxury of having models to choose from, I would probably be looking at switching up my armament selection to try and either free up some points or to better allocate that, so I've got less sort of points. Because if you're running a standard size maniple and you've got 50 points left over at the end of the day, well, 5 Bastion Shields is 50 points. You know, something like that is kind of fine. But when you're sort of in that 75 to sort of 120 points, there's not a lot you can take, especially unless you've already taken a Banner of Knights, because the only knights which will fit into that is your armagers, and for you to take armagers you need to already have another banner of knights because of their retainer rule. So it's an awkward spot. So yeah, I mean, if I ever find myself in that sort of situation, then I would be looking at my weapon selections. Is there anything that I can maybe downgrade which might give me a few more points to sort of take two Cerastus or even, a banner of Questorus? Or alternatively, is there any of my weapons I can upgrade to kind of close that gap a little bit? Because I think, you touched upon it earlier on, you don't really want to be wasting your war gear. Your war gear needs to it needs to serve a purpose to your list, because what will happen is you will just likely forget about it. You'll have too many things to track, too many bits of war gear to track. It's especially if you're playing in a tournament scene, it's very hard to keep a track on everything anyway. And yeah, the perfect moment to use that war gear will come along and you'll miss it. Unless you're just very good at kind of managing that sort of stuff. So I try and keep it simple, and I try and keep my war gear. It has to fulfill a very specific purpose in my list. The only war gear really which I consider to be sort of like that throwaway war gear is a Bastion shield, because you're always going to use that. You're always going to push your shields at some point. So it should be something that you should remember. I think though that the main aspect of list building comes down to whether or not you're planning on hitting things hard, or if you want to play to an activation advantage. Activation advantage is a big thing in tournaments. You often see multiple demi maniples of like three titans, so like six activations is kind of quite common in tournament play. But obviously you are generally leading yourself into lighter titans at that point. Warhounds, Reavers, you might fit in a single Warlord or something in your list, but generally speaking you're going to be much lighter. And so you need to make a decision if you're going to go that way, or if you're going to kind of double down on the hard-hitting stuff and maybe look at things like Extergimus. Because if you're taking an Extergimus, you need to make up that activation advantage by killing Titans as quickly as possible. And what I see quite often is that you have... If you take a lot of Titans in multiple maniples, that also gives you multiple Princeps traits. And that generally leads to a little bit of the dominance of dominant strategist in tournament play, whether you like that ability or not. I know it's a bit polarizing for some people. But having two Princeps traits gives you a lot of versatility and allows you to kind of make up for potential issues that your maniple might have. So if you're a Warhound heavy list in Ordax, for example, taking something like Ironclad Tyrant on your Ferox maniple will help you kind of continue to pass orders. Reckless Maverick, if you're Griffonicus, gives you something completely different in that sort of once per game super go, so to speak. But activation advantage, I think, is quite important. It shouldn't be ignored, because any good player is going to look at their force and think, where's my sacrifice going to be? Because with activation advantage, you need to make sure that you're keeping that advantage for as long as possible, but you also need them to focus on what, or rather they need to react to you. You need to make them react to you. So you use your activations in such a way that you can force your opponent to commit to something that they would rather commit later to. Be that a sacrificial warhound, which you push up on one side, make them react, and then you've got multiple different activations of which you can then go, okay, you're done. You're done with your three or four activations. Okay, well, I've got three or four more activations still to go, so I'm just going to have at it now and start lining up those flank attacks or what have you, or kind of getting into those awkward positions, especially if it's on the bigger, heavier warlords. So when you're building, do think about kind of what it is, what your strength is, and whether or not you want to kind of double down on some of the heavier maniples, or if you want to go for the lighter maniples. There's certain maniples, if you want to play, which you really only get the benefit of with the larger maniples. The Regia, for instance, you know, you have to take two warlords in a Regia. If you're only going to take two warlords and one warhound, then you're not getting a lot out of that maniple that you would otherwise get. But maybe you're just taking that maniple of getting access to two warlords.
As someone who's historically played quite heavy maniples, so, you know, full Corsairs plus Warlord or the Regio of my Tritonus, with, you know, kind of my later takes on building my new Legio, it's definitely going to revolve around the dual demi maniple playstyle, because the bonus activations combined with the ability to, whenever you're building a list, we're going back to the Princeps traits, right? Like, whenever you're building a list, the big question for me at least is my BGO specific seniorist trait better than dominant strategist, right? If it's not, really, you should take dominant strategist. This lets you lean into whatever cool thing that your Princeps Seniorus can do, while also having the competitive edge, so to speak, with dominant strategist itself. Having just the, even just being able to counter, you know, careful play at the beginning of the game, having more units to, you know, more or less impactful units to kind of bait out opponents' activations is so good. I think it's displayed quite well in the bat rep, you know, with your Ordax versus my Tritonus, right? There is just the weight of activations, you know, even if I was killing Titans a turn, it was too much to be able to deal with, especially in a match play scenario which has massively lent into more objective based playing in recent years, you know, having to capture objectives, assigning alpha, beta, king, queen, spoon, fork, etc., right? Like, it requires you to be able to have that fluidity to be able to complete your objectives, and the more activations you have to do that, obviously, the better.
Yeah, and on the subject of dominant strategist, like, it, there are a lot of people who still don't like it, and I get it, because it can be a bit of a gotcha. But if you're taking, like, from what I've seen in tournament play, what tends to be very common is if there is a demi maniple, you take your something cool or something useful on one of your princeps, and your second one takes dominant strategist in case you need it to avoid a charge or to get a charge in. My Tempestus list that I took to Swansea, I took a minimum Myrmidon. No, not a Myrmidon. Minimum Mandatum and a minimum Ferox. No, not a minimum Ferox. There was two Reavers in the Ferox, so it was just over minimum Ferox. And the way that I ran that was my Ferox had the dominant strategist, and I took Favoured by Fortune on the Mandatum because I wanted my Warlord to have a reroll because he had a Volcano Cannon. So one dice, one hit, you want to try and maximise as much as possible that landing a hit. And so with something like Favoured by Fortune, if you do have those single or low dice weapons on your Princeps, you can kind of mitigate or rather improve their potential effectiveness. And you can even be then fishing for those sort of fives and sixes, you know, behind cover if needs to. I think my cat's just come in to say hello, so she's probably going to like show her ass to everybody in a second. I'll try and keep her off the computer. But list building. Come on then, Tilly. Pick up.
Show the cat.
Show
the cat.
Come on.
Show the cat.
There's the cat.
Oh, there we go.
Hello.
This is why people are here.
This is why you need to watch on YouTube rather than on listen to us on although now obviously you can watch the video on Spotify.
Yeah.
But you will miss being able to see my cat, who is a real pain in the ass. I'm just going to try and get rid of her, where she'll probably now scratch at the door for ages.
Yeah, I'm sorry to announce to everyone, or excited to announce to everyone, that we are now a cat-based podcast. So if you have Titanicus, just you better go.
Yeah, well, you've got two dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up with cats, though.
Oh, fine, fair enough.
They have a special place in my heart.
So yeah. Anyway, back to lists. So think about what you're going to do. Are you going to take? Are you going to look to try and maximize your Princeps abilities and your activations, or are you going to double down with something heavy hitting or something like a Fortis, which is just, you know, your whole tactic is going to be sitting on objectives and not being moved. But if you are taking less, make sure that you're really sort of thinking about your activations, because more than ever you will need to be looking to try and focus down targets and kill at least one Titan a turn and sort of reduce that activation disadvantage that you would be on. So, I mean, yeah. Some maniples which do this really well, obviously the Furion's Extergamus is just disgusting when you put some hunting or specs on it. That thing can easily take on sort of those larger maniples because it can kill stuff super quick. And the Extergamus in general is pretty good for that, but it struggles when it gets close. If your opponent can kind of mitigate your shooting in the first couple of turns, get under your guns, then, you know, an Extergamus can become extremely vulnerable. And especially if you are, for instance, Tritonus, you know, Stygian Veil can easily kind of do that. But unfortunately, that is something that you're never going to get around. And this sort of leads me on to the next point, which we're going to talk about around stratagems, is if you're playing competitively against the same list all the time, and you know what you can do, you can obviously build your list specifically for playing that person. But when you go to a tournament, you have to consider like an all-comers approach. And if your list is like great against melee lists, but struggles against like heavy hitting or knights, you can guarantee that you will draw yourself against an Extergamus or against a knight household. Like you need to make sure that you kind of have a list which can adapt itself to certain things. Or if you are leaning heavily into like Vulpa, close combat corruptions, that you have taken the stratagems or mutations which kind of double down on ensuring that you're going to get that as often as possible. But there does sadly exist the anathema to your list a lot of the time. Combat Legios, if you get drawn against Krytos, you're probably going to have a tough time of it because of the Quake. You know, likewise, if you've got like a Solaria Warhound list and you're taking a lot of Chameleoline shrouding and you draw yourself against Furions, for instance, well, that minus one that you've spent all of your points on at long range is negated by their war gear. So you have to expect that probably the list that you don't want to play, you will probably have to play. And so make sure that you, if you don't, if you can stay relatively broad spectrum, it's a good thing to kind of do. But that's not to discourage specific gameplay styles, because I think with anybody with a combination of stratagem points, you can mitigate those anathema lists that you have.
I mean, there's stratagems for, you know, if your opponent is staying still or if Titans are standing still. I'm trying to remember which one it is.
Earthshaker Mines? Or is it the Quake?
It's like a variant of like Cursed Earth, right, or something like that, where if Titans remain stationary, they... Oh, where is it? But either way, right, okay, so there are stratagems that combat both, you know, fast-moving lists and also stationary gunline lists as well.
Yeah, I mean, the one that I was... if you come across a Fortis, they want to stay next to each other, you know... Mm-hmm. That they are asking for something like, I think, is it Earthshaker Mines or Quake Shells or something like that, where, yeah, you know, you hit them and then they get moved D6 in a random direction and can potentially then be causing kind of collisions on their own Titans. But again, and this kind of moves into the next point, your stratagem hands now are set at the beginning of tournament play. So... you cannot rely on having a perfect set of stratagems for a perfect opponent. So before, you just picked them before each game and you could go, okay, well, I'm playing a combat list this time, so I'm going to have to put in, I'll put in a Vox Blackout, I'll put in a Thermal Mines, I'll chuck in some Cursed Earth because he's not going to be shooting at me, I'll be shooting at him a lot. You can do those kind of things. And... because it's now set, you have to consider how your stratagems will be useful for a wide variety of different opponents. So what will you get the most mileage out? And what will you use every single game? And what do you need to keep up your sleeve as a what-if scenario? So the obvious one for that I take every single time is I will always take a Vox Blackout up my sleeve. Like, again, it's another one of those sort of feel-bad strats, but now that it's public in your stratagem hand, since they changed those rules, it's obviously less of a gotcha because they know you've got it, and they know that they have to consider that if they're lining up a massive charge, that turn you might hit them. Likewise, I know that a lot of events ourselves included up until now have always said that you can still use turn one stratagems if Vox Blackout is played. I am considering kind of from our perspective, just going back to the rules as written on that, because I think in a situation, if your entire strat hand is made up of turn one stratagems, so, you know, your overcharge cannon, your experimental weapon, your then you're kind of asking to be turn one Vox Blackout, and I don't think that the player playing that against you should be penalized. I think that it's one of those situations where rules is written that would stop those activations, but you should not put all of your eggs into one basket with your stratagems, and you shouldn't expect that your opponent should just let you play how you want to play, because they will try and do, and rightly so, in competitive play, they shouldn't just sit back and let your Vulpa charge you. You know, they should be allowed to play a Vox Blackout to stop that all-important charge. And that might annoy you as a Vulpa player, but in a competitive format, you need to have that option. You can't just let people do it. Yeah. And so, you know, I... diversify it and make...
If you're like me and you run an all melee Vulpa list, like, you cannot get like fucking sad if someone plays a Vox Blackout against you, because you are essentially asking for it, right? Like, that's a meme fun list, but if you're trying to be as competitive as possible and yet you still run all melee mutations, you're you're joking yourself.
Yeah, and this is why you need to be careful. You know, if that is how you're running your list, you need to be careful, and you need to anticipate that that might happen against you. So what's your plan B? And the same with your stratagems. Like, you should have this is what I intend to use most games, but what's my plan B? What do I have if I don't come across that situation, or I don't come across that Legio? Which is why selecting things which can be versatile against most people is generally going to be better than a hyper-specialized list of stratagems, albeit in some very unique circumstances. Now, I don't want this to kind of... It almost sounds like we're kind of going a little bit down a win-at-all-costs type mentality. And I want to make sure, like, that should be discouraged, right? You know, we are talking about kind of like making sure that you've got these tricks up your sleeves and stuff for this sort of stuff. But, you know, the important thing is that you and your opponent both have fun. And so don't be a complete dick about it. But when you are taking your stratagems, there's a lot of there is a reason why, you know, and we saw this after Beachhead, you get people taking similar stuff. Concealment Barrage, always useful. You know, yeah. if you are a Vulpa player and you have come across Krytos, then you can guarantee yourself, or as near to guarantee yourself, getting at least one of your Titans into close combat by using Concealment Barrage defensively and moving your Titan into the Concealment Barrage rather than trying to stop a line of fire from somebody else. Like I've done often is you full stride a Titan in the combat, in the movement phase, you move them into or as best as you can behind the Concealment Barrage, and then in the combat phase, as late on in that activation as possible, you would then, you know, move your full stride out of it so you're lined up for turn two. And sometimes all it takes in a list like that is one Titan getting into melee to completely break the line down, which then frees you up for subsequent turns. and the same for like the Exstergomus. You know, how can you slow your opponent down? Like you might need to seriously consider ways that your stratagems will help slow your opponent down so they're not getting under your carapace range. You know, maybe you take some scatterable mines or something to add big areas of the table into dangerous terrain. You know, or maybe you punish people for moving, like by taking things like thermal mines. You know, potentially you might be able to cripple somebody, leaving them exposed in the middle of the table through some clever use of stratagems. But I'm going to kind of read out the lists that I've been sort of looking at here. So what I took to Swansea and my hand for Swansea, it was 2K, so it was 8 stratagems, 6 points that we could use. In this instance here, I took the Tempestus combat drop as one, a useful Legio-specific but very expensive ability, and I think often the really good ones tend to be expensive. You know, your Civilization's Ruin is expensive for Krytos. What's it called? Surge. Stygian Veil's expensive.
Free SP.
Yeah, the Surge for Furians, I forget the full name of it, is expensive. But you know, it will, you'll get some mileage out of it if you play it right. So I took that, 3 points, and then I took Vox Blackout, which was another 3 points. So although I could, it was very unlikely that I would be playing both of those stratagems in one game. Mm. The idea being there is that if I'm playing an objective or I need to get deep into the table, for whatever reason, I would combat drop. However, if I was expecting a heavy charge against me, or even kind of things like, you know, I was facing an Exstergomus and I knew that they were all going to try and first turn, first fire against me to try and drop some shields early on, you can chuck that Vox Blackout out to sort of stop that. But it would never be very rare, very unlikely I was going to use both. And then I like to take a couple of 1 point stratagems and a handful of twos. So I took obviously Concealment Barrage for the reasons I've already said, and because I ran them as Loyalist Tempestus, I had access to a couple of situational or maneuver stratagems. So I took the Long Retreat, which is 1 point, would allow me to reposition really quickly if I needed to against an opponent or if I needed to try and get around somebody. Iron Resolve, I also took that. Works very nicely with Tempestus's ability to try and destroy Titans when they die themselves, because you have to pass a command check and then you get to fire a weapon back, and the amount of times that paid dividends for me is, it was a lot. But also, if you fail an important charge, Iron Resolve, you've got it there, you can pass that order and carry on. And then sort of the rest you can kind of pick and choose. I like a Sabotage. It's kind of like a Vox Blackout light, so to speak. Yeah. Because you can chuck that at a charging Titan, and you're not going to stop everybody, but if like you've got said Vulpa bearing down on you, it's going to be a big old long charge, chuck a Sabotage on him. Okay, 1 in 6, he might still get a charge order off, but yeah. one in six, you might shut the Titan down. And exactly. The worst case, well, other than that, the other four things on the list is you're either going to full stride him, in which case he's not going to be doing any attacking, or he's going to be crippled somehow, like a first firing Vulpa is not going to do a lot, probably. And even things like with the Splitfire, you know, moving, being forced to keep within your front arc. So I like a little bit of a Sabotage. But when it comes to tournament play, I'd always recommend that you take at least one tertiary objective. If you want to play competitively and you want to make sure that you're kind of winning games, then like the de facto go-to on tertiary objectives is a score to settle. And that scores you an additional victory point for every enemy unit that's been destroyed. And if you know that you're not going to fulfill your secondary objective, sometimes that's enough to get you the same amount that you would have lost or possibly a few more. Like I said earlier on, when I played in Swansea, I won a game based on the fact that I played that, and it pushed me a few points over based on kills. So always having a that... To be fair, like the best one is a score to settle. It's 1 point. You can hold it up your sleeve. But obviously remember that you can't spend the points earlier on. So you need to... Yeah, I would always try to, but if obviously shit goes to hell in a handbag, then maybe you need to throw out, forget about that, and just try and win through conventional means rather than holding out for an extra 3 or 4 points at the end of the game. So yeah, I think that's stratagems.
Summary of stratagems. Yeah. I like tertiaries. I think it was the only reason I did half as well with my Vulpa list at the one and only tournament I did bring it to. Was purely down to tertiaries. I was using the old rules, but even in the when I TO'd our latest beachhead, what really separated the top half of the leaderboard from the bottom half of the leaderboard was those that had brought tertiary objectives and were able to, because it's not even helping you in the games that you were playing necessarily, but as an overall score modifier, if you and a load of other people are on one win and two losses, the bonus tertiary points that you have managed to secure to get you up to that secondary limit are going to make the difference between you being at the top of the one that win, two losses, and the bottom of the...
Yeah, it might be the difference of a placement. When I look at the Swansea event, other than first place, everybody had lost a game. So the difference between me placing third or coming fourth, I think, was within five or six victory points. You know, and if I'd have played a score to settle another go, gotten a few more, who knows? You know, I might have still placed even though I lost. But it's very good. It definitely helps, and it's often overlooked from the tertiaries. And I like how that they've incorporated tertiaries into the secondary scoring in the match play guide. But more than anything, I really like the open stratagem hand. Like if you're playing match play guide or you're playing open engine war, that is an upgrade to the game, which just makes the whole quality of life of AT better for both your opponent and for you, knowing in advance. And sometimes you can play some mind games there. Like, I've taken Vox Blackout. Will I use it? Won't I use it? Yeah. You know, even if you've got no intention of using it, chuck it in your stratagem and make them think how you might use that. It's a really good addition to the game, and it also massively speeds up tournament play. Like, when we went to our tournaments last year, when we ran it in the summer and in Beachhead, like, between every single game, you had to think about what stratagems you were going to take. And that adds more time, more setup time. Whereas this is like, here's my list, here's my Princeps abilities, here's my stratagems, off we go. And it's as simple as that.
Which I think is why it's become more prevalent to have a all-rounder list recently, because of that fixed and open strat hand. Whereas before you could get away with leaning into a certain kind of playstyle, now you're a bit more of a risk doing that.
You are, yes. I think certainly in match play at the moment, you are kind of forced to have a bit more of an all-comers list. Because to your point, before they introduced this, you could just take whatever you needed against your opponent. And that was, you know, generally it was fine. But this, to a large extent, removes a lot of those gotcha moments. It's like, haha, I'm playing a Vox Blackout. Now it's like, oh yeah, I kind of expected that because I knew you had it in your list. But it does add a whole new aspect to list building. I'm trying to take something slightly different to Newcastle. I've learned some lessons after my last event, and interestingly, kind of looking at it, I'm now in a position where it's probably a good chance that I might not end up using all of my stratagem points in one in certain games, because I've tried to kind of be a bit more versatile. Like, I've never really played against knights before, and the fact that you lose out on stratagem points against knights is a big deal. Like, at 1750, you're getting 3 points. So I've chucked Static Rain in there now, just in the event that I can I come across one of those. And that ability, for one turn, every knight unit within 12 inches cannot make an ion save. And that brings you, but that brings you, it's expensive and it's only one round, but that means that now your Vulcan Mega Bolters are likely to hurt, because they're not getting their ion shield saves against Vulcan Mega Bolters, and you're fishing for nines, so you can just chip away at that damage against them. So I've chucked that in there. Vox Blackout is still in there, but then I've taken a few other slightly different ones. Concealment Barrage is still in there, because, of course, it's not. A score to settle is still in there. And then the rest of it I'm kind of messing around with. Cursed Earth, I'm going to be taking probably an Extergamus to this one, so I'm thinking being able to drop their shields quicker is probably going to be a benefit. I'm giving away all of my tactics of stuff that I'm going to be at the Newcastle event here. So if people, I lose, if I lose, it's because people knew what I was doing. I'm going to give Titan Hunter Infantry a go, I think, as well.
Oh, okay.
So just trying to kind of mix it up a little bit and try something different. And again, another way of trying to drop shields so the Extergamus can do some damage. And I'm taking Microphonicus, so it's a predominantly Reaver Extergamus, so it lacks some of the heavy hitting firepower of the Warlord while still being fairly competitive. I think we're nearly there. I think we just got to touch on some objectives before we wrap up. So objective play is a big part of, it was mostly introduced with Open Engine War, and then it was kind of, you know, developed on for match play. And I think Open Engine will very much kind of lent itself to objectives, which meant that your extergamuses and that sort of stuff were a bit of a disadvantage for most of those missions. Whereas now, the way that the missions are on the match play, there's a bit more kind of there's a few more viable options. You know, hold the line, make sure stuff doesn't come within 24 inches of your board edge. Very good for a gun line. Defend and extract, similar kind of move those those objectives behind your big titans, hold them. And then there's the flip side of that, you know, you push forwards for your fast legios, get up the board, you know, get up there and do what you need to do. But you always need to consider your objectives. And a mistake that I see a lot of people make is that they don't know what they're going to take before the game. They haven't given any thought to how their legio is going to play certain objectives. Mm-hmm. So most events will be either three or five games in length. And a lot of people are adopting the objective pool rules from the match play guide. So that is, you have access to all of the objectives. You choose one and use it. And if once you've used it, you can't use it again. So each game has to use different primaries and secondaries. It's like chalk them off, scratch them off, play something different. But there's certain combos which work better with one another, and there's certain objectives which work better with certain deployments. So every event should give you a rules pack. Most of the time they'll set a deployment per game. So think about, what do you want to play on this? You can't obviously choose what your opponent's going to do, but you can have an idea what you're going to do. What's your legio good at? Have a look at the objectives, pair them off against secondaries, which will lean into how you are going to play that particular game. For instance, there is push forwards and deny them, which is what I used in Swansea. If you can get your if you can keep your princeps alive by the end of the game and get that Princeps Titan within 8 inches of your opponent's board edge, you've immediately scored 25 victory points for your primary and 9 for your secondary. And you can do things to kind of lend to support you for doing that. But that's a good pairing. It's a good combo. Even better is Vital Cargo and deny them, because you can physically take that model off the board and he doesn't count as being destroyed. So he doesn't even need to last the whole game. But therein is a reason why a lot of events at the moment are restricting Vital Cargo and Retrieval, because both of those objectives in particular are very easy to score maximum points on turn two, and there's nothing your opponent can really do about it. They're kind of seen as being a bit too easy to win with. So a lot of events are saying, I'm going to do the pool, but I'm going to remove Vital Cargo and I'm going to remove what was it called? Vital Cargo and Retrieval. From the list. They're good fun. I did that against my game with Johnny at Beachheads. I had Vital Cargo, because it was one of the first we'd done with a match play before we kind of thought maybe this needs to be considered. But yeah, I took that and I took Deny Them. Turn two, my Princeps was on his board edge and I took him off. And there was nothing he could do about that now. I had scored 34 objective points on turn two. And then my other guy just had to survive the rest of the game for me to score maximum points. I mean, I was obviously at a disadvantage because I was a Titan down. It's kind of no different to losing a Titan early. But better in some respects. So go into your events having thought about the objectives that you're going to pair off against each other. Things like particularly aggressive missions like push forwards, where you need to get within your opponent's certain distance from your opponent's board edge. Maybe couple those up with things like would deny them, or maybe the one where you've got to kill your opponents. I forget what it's called. It used to be Wrath and Ruin in open play, but you know, kill a percentage of your opponent. And for your defensive ones, do the same. Like maybe if you're doing hold the line, that's the one where you take the secondary with the the Sword and Shield Alpha and Beta, where one Titan's got to kill something and the other person's got to survive. But try and go in with a plan. Think about your deployment. Think about the objectives that you've got available to you and what you're going to use when. And play to your plan. Don't play to your opponent's plan. It's something I see a lot is that, I mean, sometimes you just have to react. If you play against knights, your plan is out the window. Like, you have just got to deal with this wall of knights which is running towards you. Mm-hmm. But the moment that your opponent otherwise, in a normal knight game, gets you to do what they want you to do, you've probably lost already.
Yeah.
So stick to your plan. Well, we've gone from 45-minute podcasts to back up to probably another hour and a half here, Johnny.
So much to talk about, isn't there?
There is.
When it comes to you.
And I like the sound of my own voice.
Competitive play. Well, you know, I am so goddamn trash at the game. So you are the authority on this one. Hey, I'm here to have a good time and run, you know, city list.
I think your problem, Johnny, is you're just too polite at AT.
Really?
And that sounds like another whack attitude, right? But you know, you got to be a bit ruthless, especially as a Vulpa player. You can't be a nice Vulpa player. Like,
I know. Well, yeah. Hopefully, my next Legio, I'll try to be a bit more nasty and competitive with.
I think the important definition to make here is that you can be competitive without being a horrendous opponent to play against.
Yeah.
You know, the most important part of this game is having fun. And if you completely school your opponent and you walk away with that, with a high player experience points, or however your tournament is tracking it, you know, best sporting award, you know, or good sporting award points, however you're tracking it, a lot of places do 1 to 10, then you're doing something right. You know, it's a lot of people play AT because it's fun. You know, even when you are dying and blowing up, it's fun. And sometimes, obviously, it's disappointing. If you've done really well your first couple of games, you obviously start sniffing the placement, and then to lose in your last game can be really disappointing. But, you know, it is a game at the end of the day. It's possible, more so in this game, it's possible to be competitive but still give your opponent a really good time compared to other games where, you know, you might as well just rip up your score sheet and walk off.
Yeah. This isn't a game that is necessarily decided in the first turn or two, which I think is why losing is a bit more fun.
And you do sometimes you just need to dig in, you know, and sort of shit in your pants and swim a little bit, because you can often salvage, you know, a good placement, a good score, even a draw, even a win out of what seems like a catastrophic first few turns. And that was certainly the case with me when I played Ollie, losing stuff really early, making some serious mistakes. I made so many mistakes against him, but I was like, okay, I just need to change what I'm doing here. And I was able to salvage that victory. Like I say, I don't really think I deserved the win. I think he deserved to win. He played better than I did. But you just don't kind of give up. There's always something to be salvaged back.
Yeah, that's the game. And it's random enough to where you can be, you know, eating shit, but pull it back.
Yeah.
But not so random that, you know, you're risking your army every time you roll the dice. You know what I mean? Like, there is enough, you know, there is enough of normalized situations where, you know, you would expect this to go down, and 90% of the time it does go down, but there is like that 10% where you actually do kill your opponent's Titan with your Ardex defense lasers. Or, you know,
like we saw, I mean? Like, what happened twice, did it? in that game we played?
If you haven't seen the last battle report we did, like stuff like that can happen. And it's funny, even if you're the recipient, I bet, you know, I hope you found it funny.
I mean, like, we always joke that Ardex defense lasers do nothing and then they kill two titans.
90% of the time, well, 100% of the time for me, I forget to use them. And then the one time I do, and it kills two warhounds.
Yeah, and like, even when you lose in a scenario like that, you still walk away with that cool story about, like you never believe what happened in my game. That was crazy.
It's the only game where, you know, you can have like these chain reaction, catastrophic meltdowns. If you told that to a competitive gamer of, you know, any other war game, you know, oh yeah, if I killed your guy, there's a chance that your guy would blow up and kill a load of your other guys. They'd be like, oh my God, that's like a horrible system to have in a competitive game. But it meshes and works really nicely.
If you're a Fortress player, you kind of want that to happen. Red Sky is that bad boy.
Exactly.
You know, make things explode more. Override signal and Red Skies make him go Nova. Like, you know, even my Tempestus, I get a benefit from dying. You know, and you know, or potential benefit from dying, and it does kind of soften that blow, and it's really satisfying. Like the game I played against Ben, the first two shots of the game from his warhounds, he killed two warhounds. Mm-hmm. I started the game on my activation, losing two warhounds in the first turn, and then I returned fire and did nothing. But then, you know, he killed another one of my guys, and then I killed him back, and then his Titan then went Nova and took out three of his Titans. Like, and all of a sudden, the balance completely swung. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, even when things seem lost, there's always a chance. And don't lose sight of that objective, because the moment you forget about your objective, then that's probably where you're going to end up with like a zero victory points. Like, there's always something to be salvaged. Play to your objective. Try your best to hold it off. Sometimes it'll be unavoidable, but try to, you know, push your Titan that little bit further. Get to your opponent's board edge. Don't lose sight of that.
Exactly. I think it's very easy from experience. You know, when you know you're losing, and it's like you go to panic mode. It's like, okay, how can I just react to what's happening in front of me? When it's like, no, actually, just let it happen. Obviously, you know, do the best you can to mitigate the damage and deal damage back. But if you've got that objective in the middle of the field, your focus shouldn't be trying to counter whatever's going on, because if you're thinking about that, you've already lost the situation at hand because you're panicking. Just go for the points, go for the objective. Especially in competitive play, if you lose the game but you make the margin of VP a lot smaller, that will help you in the long run for the tournament itself. Yeah. So, you know, you can get to situations where it might be the best thing to actually ignore the four warhounds that are shooting your Titans in the back, because you're going to lose and there's no way you can turn your warlords around to kill them before they get you. So that's just...
And in that situation, you think, how can I salvage this? Okay, I'm just going to push that reactor as hard as possible, make sure I'm in the red, so that by the time that they inevitably kill me, there is a good chance that he's exploding. And if he explodes, I'm hopefully going to kill some other things there. Always look for those situations. And there's almost like an element of triage in those situations. Like, what can I control? What can't I? And if you can't control it, don't worry about it. Like, try and focus on where you can make the difference, and don't give up, really.
Yeah, if you are a fellow sweaty goblin like myself who plays Magic the Gathering, there is a common phrase, which is life is a resource, right? Like, if you're having to sacrifice Titans to get VP, that's dead Titans well spent, you know. You can even put that as far as the stratagem points as well. I think 1 point for a tertiary is, why wouldn't you, right? What's what's an upgraded plasma cannon gonna do for you, you know, if you can just get the extra
points. Is that gonna score you an extra 5 victory points? Might do.
But is it? It might help that journey, but when you can actually just spend a stratagem point and get those 5 points anyway, it's like, well, you know.
I'm really, one of the reasons that I want to get into a bit more kind of like campaigny sort of narrative side of AT is I want to see how that changes the game. Mm-hmm. Would I care more? Would I be more cautious as a player? Because I think your competitive players are quite aggressive in how they play. You know, they'll try and close down gaps quickly, you know, close the distance, get within 20. Would you play more cautiously if you knew that there was an actual consequence to a narrative? I don't know.
No, hell no. Right? Like, I don't, you know, that's not someone that really plays super cautiously anyway, but like, it's narrative. You're there to have a bit of fun. You know, if your Legio is you know, the less cautiously you play, the more stories there are going to be to tell. And that is quite literally the purpose of a narrative.
Yeah, event, right? You're exactly right. You're exactly right. No, nobody remembers the games where nothing happened. And you both basically just fired a few shots across the table. One and a Titan maybe walked around and fell down, but didn't really do much else than that. Like, the games that you remember are the games with lots of explosions, the games where you end up killing a ton of your own stuff, that you accidentally don't realise that you've already pushed that Titan a bit too close to the orange, yeah. And then you've declared that you're firing a weapon. It's like, oh, right, well, now I'm going into the orange then. Whoops. Forgot about that.
You're ending the game 6-35, but everyone was around the table on the final turn of the game, like laughing and cheering. You know, that's the kind of stuff you really want.
Absolutely.
I think that's, yeah.
And it's important that you don't lose sight of that. And being a humble winner is the most important skill in this game. Mm-hmm. Playing the game well is all very well and good, but winning well and winning with modesty, let's just say, is an incredibly admirable quality. And like I say, if you can completely table somebody and they've still got a massive shit-eating grin on their face at the end of it, then you know that it's been a good game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So do let us know kind of what you thought about today. A little bit different from our usual content. And like I say, we are kind of in full tournament mode at the moment, so we are certainly I'm kind of living and breathing all of this stuff at the moment, and you know, it's always nice to come home with trophies, but it's not what the game is all about at the end of the day, but it is nice. And I need to try and play. My mission is to place in a couple of weeks, so let's see how I do in Newcastle. I'm going up with Johnny from Battlebling. Long old drive, bit of a road trip. And yeah, it was great when I was up there in September last year. So I'm hoping for a repeat experience. Yeah. And if you are looking for and let's be honest, our June event is going to be a proper casual kind of tournament. Really, it's only one day, three games, open to people of all abilities. You know, that is if you want to cut your teeth. Or just get yourself a couple of games in, perfect opportunity to come down to Poole and buy yourself a ticket to that tournament. And you never know, you might walk away with some prizes.
You know, it's going to be chill because I might be playing. Well, I wouldn't be playing if it wasn't going to be chill.
There we go. do check it out. Details are in the comments. But hope you've all enjoyed it today. Please do remember that if you haven't done so already, give us a like and subscribe on YouTube if you're watching us there, or if you're listening to us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. You know, give us a 5-star, give us 5 stars and leave us a review. Both is great. Either or is great. We're obviously, I know it's been a little bit slow on the content side of things, but we're hoping to pick that up again. I've spent thousands of pounds doing up my garage, so I'm hoping that that will give us another opportunity for a venue to do some bat reps on, sort of, so we're not always having to do it around yours, Johnny. But yes, that might still be a little bit of a way off, because I've got to, at the moment it looks like a murder shed. It needs to be appropriate for, it looks like something out of Dexter, you know, like you can imagine loads of shrink bubble wrap and stuff kind of around the tables when it's not full of models. So just before we go, I do want to quickly give one big shout out to our friends at Loon Constructs. They are new on the market, providing grimdark terrain stuff printed. Doug's an excellent chap. His quality of his stuff that he's shown me is amazing, and it's really good value. If you're in the UK, do check out Loon Constructs. He's also very, very kindly donated a ton of grimdark terrain to ourselves, which we are going to be using for a, hopefully, if I don't fall afoul of the legals and terms and conditions, I want to do a raffle to raise some money for charity, as we've been doing for the Motor Neurone Disease Association. And he's given us literally a ton of grimdark terrain to give away as part of that raffle. So once I've got my head around the terms and conditions and made sure that I'm not going to get done for breaking any gambling rules or anything weird
in Australia, we have to give them like a what color is the sky kind of question just for it to be legal.
I thought it's a great idea, it'd be super easy, and then I started talking to people and I was like, yeah, just make sure you do this, otherwise you know you can be sued, and I was like, okay, I'm just trying to do it I'm just trying to raise some money for charity here, but yeah, I'm determined to make it work somehow, and I'll be looking at an opportunity to raffle off all of this stuff that Doug's given us. So do check out Loon Constructs for all of your grimdark terrain needs. And if there's nothing on, if there's something specific that you're after which isn't on the website, maybe drop him an email. They've been going a number of months now, but I believe their catalogue is still being built up on the website. So get in touch with them, see if they can print it for you. I highly recommend it. I'll also drop the details of them in the description below. So yeah, I think that's it for today. Big old, it's good. It feels good to be doing a bit more of a long one again. I think we're probably pushing 2 hours at this point, but
we're not rushing, are we?
Yeah, this doesn't happen very often. Should probably happen more often, but
absolutely.
But hopefully the stars are going to start aligning. I'm going to do one more shout out. A lot of you have been asking about the lore videos that we've been doing. So on YouTube, we did a series of lore videos. Absolutely intend to do more. I've got the scripts written up for Metallica and Vulturum, which I plan on doing next. If you want some short, bite-sized information regarding the lore of certain Legios, do check out our YouTube. There's stuff on there for Ordax, Solaria. I've not done Volp yet, I don't think.
Midway through doing Volp.
Yeah, Ordax, Solaria, Mortis, Tempestus, Ignatum, and a few more. Oh, Krytos are all up there. Just short, bite-sized lore videos, and I hope to be adding more to those soon as my schedule becomes a bit less hectic. Thank you very much for staying with us tonight, guys. Good to be recording again, Johnny.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do join us again next time, and always remember to go big, go loud,
and go maximal.